The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into ESPN FC. Kay Murray and Stevie Nicol here with you, and we've got some big games to look ahead to this weekend. The biggest of them all happening on Sunday in Barcelona. It's the first Clásico of the season. It's Barcelona against Real Madrid. It's exclusive on ESPN Plus, and the preview show will start at 9 a.m. Eastern across ESPN2 and ESPN Plus. Make sure you tune in early to catch all the build-up. But for now, we'll send it out to our team in Spain. Dan Thomas is with Sidlo, Pablo Zabaleta and Ali Moreno.
Thank you very much, Kay. How's about that for a view? It is the perfect evening here in Barcelona. The only blot on the landscape, really, is this lot.
Ow.
Sidlo, Pablo Zabaleta and Ali Moreno. We're, of course, here to look ahead to our Clásico, Ali. We just, of course, got here. What, yesterday? Was it yesterday we got here?
Yes, we did.
Feels like yesterday. And you can feel that buzz already in the city.
Yeah, and so you look at a team that played against Dinamo Kiev in Barcelona, and I think the fans here in Barcelona were looking for reasons to be excited about El Clásico, be optimistic, and feel like, you know what, this team is trending in the right direction. Off of the international break, a victory against Valencia, you're thinking, okay, here we go. And then you play Dinamo Kiev, and it was one of those matches in which, if you're a Barcelona fan, you're kind of like, we won, but we don't feel great.
Yeah.
And that's sort of what you get about Barcelona this year, is that you take a step forward, but then it feels like you take a couple of steps back. If you're Barcelona, here's another opportunity against Real Madrid, at home, a team in Real Madrid that, yes, was dominant against Shakhtar, but they're vulnerable as well. They have their issues as well. Maybe this is the moment you turn the corner.
As always, with any Clásico, it feels, Sid, so many subplots.
Yes, it's easy for you to say. Yeah, I mean, there always are. There's always lots of themes surrounding it. Of course, this year, a lot of the focus has been on the fact that it's his first season in, 16 years without Messi. Not without Messi playing, because he's missed Clásicos before, but without him even being here. And that, of course, I think has cast light on a new generation of players coming through at Barcelona. And in terms of the Real Madrid players, I think it's cast light in particular on Benzema. The idea that if Messi has gone, who is the new face of La Liga or the face of Real Madrid? Who is the new best player in the world? And of course, it's a big, big campaign at the moment to push Benzema towards the Ballon d'Or. And I think that's one of the many subplots, whether Benzema maybe has the, if you like, imagine Benzema is in kind of campaign mode at the moment. Yep. This is his last big rally, his last big chance to try and convince people that, yes, over 2021, he has been a sufficiently strong candidate to maybe win the Ballon d'Or.
Julian Laurent is very much his propaganda manager, by the way. And what was interesting in an interview that Jules did with Benzema, I asked him about this game, and he goes, it still, for me, is the biggest in the world, because it is still Real Madrid against Barcelona. It is still one of the biggest rivalries, and it's still one of the best venues, of course, in football.
Oh, massive, massive game. I think no matter what team you support, it's just, you know, it's always a much game to watch, because, you know, always exciting game between both teams. Especially, I have to say, after COVID, I think so many people have been waiting for so long this kind of game, especially Barcelona fans. They already play some of the games at a stadium, but this is against Real Madrid, the biggest rivals. And I think, you know, it's one of those games that you cannot miss.
What sort of game are we expecting? You were saying beforehand, you think there's going to be a lot of goals, mainly because no one can defend.
No, but offensively, when you look at, you know, Benzema, he's in a great form. Vinicius, I think, against Shakhtar, been absolutely fantastic. Then the return of Ansu Fati against Valencia, I think, was, you know, really good news for Barcelona. He's been one of the best players in that game. I would expect goals. I say 3-3. That was my prediction. I'm very optimistic.
0-0. Write it.
0-0.
Sign, seal, deliver.
Come on. Defensively, both teams really struggling at the moment.
Obviously, this is only, the third game back in which the Camp Nou could be at capacity. Mm. We've seen these previous two matches, the one against Valencia in the Champions League game midweek. It was almost 50,000. So, we're at half full. Are we expecting a full house this time round?
Not 100%, but I think we'll be quite close. I think we'll be north of 70,000. I think one of the things that's happened in this return to football and this return to stadiums being opening, and we're looking at fans not going back in some cases, particularly in Barcelona's case, but I think it's a broader question, and it's a question about some fans still being concerned about COVID, some fans actually not knowing the mechanism now to get tickets because they've been so long away, some season ticket holders who didn't renew because they didn't necessarily think that this season would be a season with tickets. So I think when we look, for example, at the Champions League game in midweek and we look at the Camp Nou not being full, and it's easy to go, well, that's because they're all disillusioned with Barcelona.
Right.
There's an element of that, but it's not quite as simple as that. This is being replicated at lots of grounds across Spain, and I think partly it's mechanical.
What's interesting, Ali, is the relationship between the Barcelona fans and the team at the moment. We've spoken to people out here in the city, and they're disillusioned with everything, of course, that happened over the summer.
Yeah, and no better example of that than us watching the game against Dinamo Kiev. We're sitting in a bar. All right, here we go. Barcelona fans all over the place, and it was so quiet.
Yeah,
they're watching the game, and it's almost they're sitting on their hands. And are we supposed to support this team? Are we supposed to boo this team? We don't quite know what to do because we get excited with Ansu Fati, and we get excited with Gavi, and whenever Pedri's on the field, we get excited about him too. But we're not excited by Luke de Jong,
right,
and we're not excited by Ronald Koeman. We're not excited the direction of this club, and we don't quite know what is it that we're supposed to cheer for. And so even when the game is going on and they're creating a chance here, they didn't create many chances, but the times that they did create some opportunities, it was almost like, okay, forget it. Let's go back to our beers and our conversations. There isn't that sort of engagement with the team. There, I think these fans are waiting to engage with a group, but they don't know what group they're engaging with.
I think it's worth pointing something out, actually, that within the stadium, I think some fans have become, those who are going, I think have become aware of their role. So I think they've become aware of the vulnerability of the team and taken it upon themselves, okay, our job now is to support them. So inside the stadium, the games where the fans have been there, there seems to have been a desire to say, we play a part here.
Right.
We know this isn't great. We know that there's a reality that's inescapable. And Koeman has said lots of times, that famous phrase now, es lo que hay, it is what it is. and that idea that, okay, so we now help these guys through, not least, of course, because that other element that's really important, I think, in that whole, what would you call it, mental process, is that this is a young team. So they look at Gavi, they look at Nico, they look at Ansu. Obviously, Ansu's slightly different because he's been so good for a year and a half despite the injury. And I think they look at them and go, these guys could be good. And maybe we can be part of the reason that carries them to that level that we believe they can eventually reach.
The concern would be, from a Barcelona perspective, is that if Real Madrid score early in this game, how much do the crowd then keep that role, or how much do they turn on the team? And the big question is then, how much would that affect you as a player on the pitch?
No, that's especially at the Camp Nou against Real Madrid. If you consider, you know, earlier goal against Real Madrid, then, you know, sometimes the fans just turn very quickly. And Barcelona players, because of the situation, they can be in trouble. But I think just Sid mentioned some of those players that probably they choose getting some games for Barcelona, like Gabi, Pedri, Ansu Fati. They're good, but they don't have the experience of Piqué or Busquets or Jordi Alba that probably they can bring those young lads together and say, listen, stay calm,
right,
you know, should keep playing. We still got minutes to score goals, but always at the Camp Nou, if you concede a goal, especially against Real Madrid, you know, could be very dangerous.
And the problem is the recent history of Barcelona against the best teams. Mm. So when you consider what they did against Bayern Munich in Champions League, they did not even belong. Mm. What they did against Atletico Madrid, it didn't seem like it was even competitive. And so you're looking for, if you're a Barcelona fan, for reasons to say, okay, yes, to believe we're going to win this game. If there's an early goal by Real Madrid, all those reasons that you're hoping to see kind of disappear. And then you go into the doubts of, do we really belong and are we still competitive? And if you look at those matches that I just mentioned, well, the answer is no. But I still think that you can be competitive against Real Madrid because, as I just mentioned, Real Madrid has their own flaws as well. This is an opportunity. If I'm a Barcelona player, I'm a Barcelona fan, I'm thinking of this as an opportunity to really kind of take a step forward and really think of ourselves as still a contender within La Liga. If it doesn't go that way, then it's confirmation what we already knew, and that is Barcelona has some real, real issues.
The big news today, of course, coming out of the Barcelona camp, positive news, Ansu Fati signing a brand new contract that will keep him in the club till 2027. How much of a big deal is this, not only for Barcelona, but for La Liga in general, to keep one of the hottest talents in the game?
Let me take you back to, 3 weeks ago now, when Ansu came back and he scored. And he scored against Levante, and Paco López, the manager of Levante, was asked about it. Now, obviously, under normal circumstances, you've just been beaten by this kid. You're not particularly happy about it. And Paco López said, look, we're delighted that he's back. Because this is important. Because he's a kid that people like, for a start. He comes across as being very genuine, as being very real, and I think people want him to do well. Obviously, the fact that he's had a terrible injury and been out for 11 months means that people are predisposed towards liking him. But I think there is, as you rightly say, I think there is a broader question there, which is, this could be the league's franchise player, not just Barcelona's. This could be the kid that in 3-4 years' time we look at and say, yeah, he's one of the best 2 or 3 players in the world. Now, obviously, that's loading a lot of pressure on him. You know, this is a kid that's just signed a contract where his buyout clause
is a billion.
It's a billion euros. Yeah. He was given Leo Messi's number 10. He comes back from a year out injured and he gets put on the pitch and everyone says, here's our hope again. I mean, no pressure, kid.
Sure.
But the great thing about him is, and you were saying this on Sunday, Pablo, one of the great things about him is he plays like there's no pressure.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be this easy to do what he's doing.
Yeah. Absolutely. I always appreciate players when they're that young, but they play with that huge personality. You know, it must be not easy to wear number 10 after Messi. And look at this guy. Every time he talks, he's very proud about this. But he doesn't really feel the pressure. He's just enjoying it. So that's great.
And that, I think, is the key, enjoying it. There's always a smile in Ansu Fati's face. And it's not easy to have a smile right now if you're a player for Barcelona. There's every reason to feel like, man, I don't know what we're doing.
Yeah.
And yet this kid shows up, and maybe because of the fact that he had this injury, that he appreciates the opportunity, that he can play the game that he loves. Now, all this pressure that is lumped on his shoulders, he can't not do anything about that. That's something that everybody else are doing. So, but what he can control is the way that he carries himself and the way he enjoys the game that he plays and the fact that he's being productive. And that's all positive signs, not only for Ansu Fati, but of course for Barcelona.
Of course, it's being built. When it comes to the youth of these sides, Ansu Fati against Vinicius Jr. What a roller coaster like Vinicius Jr. has had, obviously, since joining Real Madrid, whistled at the Bernabeu, that famous video of Benzema at halftime in the Champions League saying, don't pass to him, he's not on our side. But goodness me, has he started this season with a bounce in his step.
And just as importantly, with a degree of confidence that we didn't necessarily anticipate from him. So we've always watched Vinicius, and I personally have been a defender of him because I enjoy watching someone who makes things happen. It can occasionally be chaotic. He can occasionally run out of space on the pitch. He can occasionally take a bad decision at the end of the run. But he makes things happen. I think what's changed this year is that final decision has been better. He's been calmer. He's been one-on-one with goalkeepers and taken his time and finished, whereas in the past you would see him be one-on-one with a goalkeeper and he'd shoot straight at the keeper or he'd put the ball wide. And, you know, it became almost a running joke in Spain, which I think was unfair before, but is even more unfair now. This idea that if it's not a deflection, he's not going to score. And, of course, he scored in the Clásico, was it 18 months, 2 years ago now, when Piqué, I think it is, deflects it in. And now there seems to be a sense of tranquility about him,
right,
a calmness about him that wasn't there before.
And then how important is that for his teammates to try and maintain, to keep him in that kind of zone?
Well, you know, as a young lad, sometimes you don't need to get confused about a situation where you probably, you can think, okay, now I'm the best player of Real Madrid and that's it, you know, job done. Especially because don't forget that Hazard is in the same team, probably his injury. But, you know, this guy, Ancelotti, gave him the opportunity to play. He kept Hazard on the bench for some of the games. And he shows, you know, that Vinicius is ready to perform, ready to play. He looks more mature, as he say. He's more an end product now in the final third, which is what you need as a Real Madrid player. You can dribble, you can, you know, do 1-2, but in front of the goal you have to score. You have to be very clinical. And that makes the difference of being a great player or good player. And for Real Madrid, you have to be a great player. So hopefully you can continue playing in the same way.
All Vinicius has to do is just look at the guy he's playing alongside with, and that's Karim Benzema. And so you want consistency, you want productivity. That's exactly what Benzema gives Real Madrid. And so if you're Vinicius, you're proud of the fact that you earn a position on this team by your performance on the field. That, in fact, Ancelotti had to sit Eden Hazard down because Vinicius would not be denied. Vinicius had to be on the field. He earned that. and how do you keep it? How do you maintain it? And then you hang on to Karim Benzema and say, you know what? I'm going to follow what this guy is doing, because this guy knows exactly what it is to be consistent, to be productive, to be impactful for my team when it matters. You're seeing a lot of that from Vinicius. It's got to continue. And if Real Madrid is going to achieve something important this season, Vinicius is going to have to be a part of that as well.
Gentlemen, as always, thank you very much. So much, of course, still to talk about between now and that big game on Sunday. But for now, back to the studio, okay?
Thanks so much, Dan. Great stuff from the team. You'll be hearing from them all weekend. And join them Sunday, 9 a.m. Eastern. It's a simulcast on ESPN2 and ESPN Plus with all the build-up to the big game. And the big game does kick off at 10 Eastern on ESPN Plus. And in the build-up to it, we are bringing you classic El Clasico matches. And these two were absolutely brilliant. 6-2 Barcelona winning at the Santiago Bernabeu. You can see that game on ESPN2 at 10 p.m. this evening. And then Real Madrid beaten by Barcelona in April of 2004, 8 p.m. on Friday on ESPN News.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Manchester United and Liverpool renewing their rivalry on Sunday at Old Trafford. As you look at the Premier League standings right now, Liverpool are in second after 8 games played with 18 points. Manchester United down in 6. And if we take a look at Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's results against Liverpool, not too great. Just the one win back in January in the FA Cup. That was a 3-2 win. Otherwise, it's been 2 losses and 3 draws. One person who isn't feeling too confident about the weekend's game is Paul Scholes, speaking on BT Sport after Manchester United's 3-2 win over Atalanta. He said the first half was worrying. It looked anything but a team. I think if they were playing a better team, they'd be out of sight. Can they play Liverpool like that? Never in a million years. Well, we now welcome in Gab Marcotti to talk more about this game. But I will start with you, Stevie. Do you agree with what Paul Scholes is saying?
I think Paul Scholes is absolutely spot on. You know, you're playing against the front three of Mane, Firmino, and particularly Salah, who are absolutely on fire. They got, 13 goals in the last 4 games? If you're going to let Liverpool come through your midfield and then get at the back four, then the only thing that's going to happen is you're going to give up chances and Liverpool are going to score goals, because that's just what Liverpool are doing right now. So Paul Scholes is 100% right. They look like a group that runs around, works hard, yes, but has quality, and that's what's getting them by right now. But as Paul Scholes says, you can't do that with a team of the quality of Liverpool, because you give them a 2-goal start, you ain't getting back in the game.
Things changed for Manchester United in that game against Atalanta when Paul Pogba came onto the pitch. Are you surprised that he didn't start this clash?
I am a little, because when you're in a run of not particularly good results and not particularly playing well, you have to get your best team on the field and you have to get that rhythm going and you have to get the confidence up and you have to get everybody on the same page. And once you do that, then you can start thinking about resting people, in my opinion. And so, yeah, I think it was a huge mistake. And you saw his contribution when he came on, and that just pretty much proved it.
Gab, was he rested or was it a message from Solskjaer?
I don't know what that message would be, because, you know, especially when he plays Pogba in the 2 in front of the back 4 and things don't work out, then immediately the commentariat comes out and says, well, Ollie doesn't trust him, Pogba can't be trusted, Mino Raiola, the contract, blah, blah, blah. Maybe I don't know if he bought into that message or what, but you know, you saw the change, and obviously it also mattered that when Pogba came on, you know, let's not forget, there's an Atalanta team playing without their best attacking midfielder, without their two starting wingbacks, and without their best defender, and with their second best defender out too in the second half. So I'm sure that played into it as well. But what I wonder about here with Pogba is, we've heard the line all along, the contract's there, he just needs to sign it, he's out of contract at the end of the season. Well, if he doesn't get to play in big games like this when he feels he's ready, then it does send a message as well that it's less likely that he's part of the club's plans going forward, which means that then next summer, instead of buying one central midfielder, you have to buy two of them. So, yeah, to me, there's no question. It's hard to fit Pogba in there and fit the pieces because you've got Cristiano up front, you got to find your balance, and you have to do it in running because it's during the season. But it seems pretty obvious that, you know, he's one of your three most talented players, and frankly, he should be playing every game that he's fit.
I actually feel a little bit for Pogba, you know. You know, everybody says, oh, why is he so good for France and he's not for Man United? Well, when he plays for France, they're organised. Everybody has a job. Everybody knows their job. And everybody actually probably knows everybody else's job around them. So you can fit into a system, particularly a guy like Pogba. So when he's playing for Manchester United, they don't look as though they have a system. They don't look as though they know what their jobs are. And so as a player, you're running around and you're thinking, do I step over here? Do I stay where I am? You're constantly betwixt and between. Whereas Pogba for France knows exactly what his job is. That's the biggest problem I think United and Pogba have.
Gab, I hear you laughing.
No, I completely agree. And I think, you know, not only isn't there much of a system and there aren't established patterns of play, Pogba himself, you know, did sometimes he plays in central midfield, sometimes he plays out wide. The wingers, you know, Bruno and Cristiano obviously always play the big games, but then the wingers seem to always change. And whoever plays alongside him in central midfield seems to always change as well. So in that situation, you don't have patterns of play, you don't have a system, you're not always playing the same position, and the players around you change, and then you're expected to live up to your price tag and your salary. It's kind of difficult to do that, even if you're Pogba.
Well, even though Manchester United are playing at Old Trafford, Liverpool are favourites when we take a look at the odds for this one. Manchester United 2-1 to win, the draw 3-1, Liverpool 5-4. Gab, what's your prediction for this game?
I'm going to go Liverpool, but I think there is a big caveat. They've been untouchable the way they've been playing recently, but a few things cropped into the Atletico Madrid game. And look, United play nothing like Atletico Madrid, completely different teams, different contexts, and whatever else. But I'd be a little bit concerned about some of the defending that we saw, that led to those two Atletico goals. And obviously Varane will still be out for this game at the other end. So that is a bonus for Liverpool. But I'm just slightly concerned at the back. And also, I don't think Naby Keita scored a tremendous goal. Other than that, I think they're somewhat undermanned in the middle of the park. Thiago Alcantara likely still out. That might be the only concern. If Liverpool are going to not get all 3 points, I think that's where it's going to happen.
Are you confident they can take all 3 points, Liverpool, Stevie?
Well, I am, but I agree with Gab. You know, Van Dijk and Matip as a partnership against Atletico Madrid were awful. I think that's the only way you can put it. And so if I'm Manchester United, the areas that I'm looking to hurt are in behind Matip, no question. Van Dijk, I'm still going to say you don't want him to do with him. He did have a bad game, but we know the guy's quality. I think they've got to absolutely go after Matip because particularly him, this Liverpool line over the last, 18 months, 2 years, has been a very high line, which I don't particularly like, but it's been solid. They've all been on the same page. They haven't had guys drifting apart and dropping deep. But that's what happened the other night with Matip. He kept dropping and being 5 and 10 yards behind the other three. So if I'm Manchester United, that's what I'm looking at. That's where I'm going for.
How are they going to approach it overall? Are they going to look at sitting back and then countering? United.
I don't think United will have a choice. As we've just been talking about, they're not particularly well organised. And so Liverpool only know how to play one way, and they will go at them. And so it will probably suit United in a way that they can do that. Because generally, when they've got to do that, which is away from home, we know how successful they've been away from home. So that kind of plays into United's hands a little bit. But defensively, United are pretty weak right now. Mm-hmm. So Liverpool are going for it, and I think Liverpool will win it.
Yeah, it might play into the hands as well that they are not favourites in this game, Manchester United. There'll be more talk about the big game on tomorrow's FC. Make sure you always catch ESPN FC. It is available daily. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. In the Europa Conference League, Spurs fall down to third in Group G after losing 1-0 to Vitesse, with Nuno Espirito Santo changing his entire starting 11 in order to prepare for Sunday's Premier League match with West Ham. Wasn't a good night for Jose Mourinho's Roma either. They were beaten by Bodo Glimt. And in Group C, this is how things are looking so far. They conceded six goals, and that's the first time that a Mourinho side has conceded six goals in his managerial career, which extends to over 1,000 games. Gab Marcotti joining me now, and our Jan Agafyortov spoke to Jose Mourinho after this game, and he wasn't very nice about the players that he used, Gab, was he?
No, he wasn't. He basically came out and he said, well, look, you know, I played my second team and the reality is that my second team has much less quality in it than Bodo Glimt's first team. Now, look, here's a curious thing. And people immediately are going to say, oh, look, it's same old Mourinho. You know, this is his way of sending a message to the ownership that they need more signings. And, you know, he only has 12 or 13 players he can trust. And these second team guys are all rubbish. The curious thing is that most of these guys on the second team, from Borja Mayoral to Carlos Perez to Ibanez to Diawara, these are all guys who actually played a lot of football last year under Paulo Fonseca. And under Paulo Fonseca, Roma just missed out on qualifying for the Champions League. And they went really deep in the Europa League. I think, if I'm not mistaken, they were knocked out by United in the semifinals. So, frankly, when I look at this, I'm saying, what kind of message are you sending? You're saying all these players are terrible now. They're far worse than Bodo Glimt. But then a different manager a year ago achieved some pretty impressive results with those supposedly terrible players. So I don't know. It feels like, you know, deja vu all over again with Mourinho. I hope I'm wrong. I hope he just said, oh, maybe this will be a great way of motivating them. No, I was wrong. This will backfire and he'll move on. Because he did trick me into thinking that he had learned lessons of the past and we saw a slightly different Mourinho. But no, this feels like he's totally up to his own old tricks.
Taking a look at the Serie A table, things are going a lot better for Roma there. Lots to talk about when it comes to the Serie A this weekend. But as you see, Roma are fourth right now. Napoli leading the proceedings with 24 points and Milan just behind them. Both of them remained unbeaten so far at this stage. But the reason you see Inter and Juve highlighted there is because this Sunday it is the Derby d'Italia. Gab, which 11, which first 11 on paper is stronger here?
It's a great question. If you talk on paper of the players who are available, obviously no Paulo Dybala for Juventus. I think, and I didn't expect I'd say this, I think I might still lean towards Inter, with the reason being that I think they're stronger in the middle of the park with Barella and Brozovic. I think they have a defined way of playing that they're I don't say they're comfortable with. It's not like Conte, but they're relatively comfortable with. Dzeko and Lautaro, you have experience. You know what you're going to get. Whereas I think Juventus are going to be slightly flying blind. You know, we see the Morata-Chiesa partnership. They're obviously talented. But, you know, it's not necessarily the way that Allegri would want to play. So I think maybe for the first time in a while, you know, you look at the starting 11s and you say maybe intershade it in terms of quality.
But what we are seeing from Juve so far is them quietly going about their business under Max Allegri. He's getting the best out of players such as Bernardeschi and Decilio. It's not too exciting, but is the Allegri effect taking hold again?
Well, here's the thing, right? If you get the best out of a guy like Decilio, you're getting the best of a guy who has a certain ceiling. And that ceiling is not as high, I think, as most Juve fans would like it to be. You could make the same point for Bernardeschi as well, who's playing for a contract, by the way. And not saying that it's something to do with it, but you do wonder about that. look, this is unimpressive football that they're playing, but he's steadied the ship. He's gotten the results. That's always very important at Juve, as Pirlo and Sarri found out. But I don't think this is the football that Allegri wants to play. Allegri, he comes out and he plays the whole thing, well, it's all about results. But in reality, he has played different types of football. He's played more attacking football. He's played football where they've created more chances in the past. And that is the football that he wants to play. He's not stupid. He knows that you can't simply, you know, sit back, defend, not do much, sneak a goal, and then hang in there. He knows that era of football is over. And it's not going to take him where he wants to be and where Juve want to be. So he steadied the ship. Let's see what he can do when Dybala comes back and he's had a little more time to work.
What are your thoughts then about this weekend, Gab? Who do you think is going to win? Do you think there will be a winner?
This is a tough one because it does have kind of, you know, having said all that, you know, Juve fifth consecutive 1-0 kind of written all over it, doesn't it? I think the thing with Inter is, look, I want to praise Inter because I thought they were very professional. I know, right, Sheriff Tiraspol, ha, ha, ha. But, you know, this was Sheriff Tiraspol who were leading the group, let's not forget. And this came on the heels of an Inter defeat to Lazio where the wheels came off at the end. They lost their nerve. There was fighting, the melee, Correa, Luis Felipe, Felipe Anderson, then putting the ball out of the play, all that nonsense. If Inter are going to go onto the pitch, you know, as a bundle of nerves, then it's going to be a very, very difficult tie for them against Juve. So I think this is very, very close right now. We need to see what the real Inter is. If the game against Lazio was just a blip, then Inter should handle this. If not, I think it's the kind of game that Juve could easily sneak, even though perhaps they get outplayed by Inter.
Okay, very much looking forward to this game, the big one in Italy at the weekend. It's the Derby d'Italia. And if you'd like to hear more from Gab, then you can do so on the Gab and Jules podcast. And as you can see here, the special guest this week is Dan Thomas. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
Upcoming Bundesliga schedule for you. Matches kick off on Friday with Mainz taking on Augsburg, 2:30 p.m. Eastern. It will take you all the way through to Sunday. Look out for Bayern and see whether they can build on their emphatic second half performance in the Champions League this week when they take on Hoffenheim. Dutch Eredivisie, Ajax and PSV at the top, and very good to know that they too will be playing on what's a massive rivalry weekend in European football. You can catch that game on Sunday, 10:45 Eastern, and it will be on ESPN+. Well, that's all we've got time for on the latest edition of the show. No surprises for guessing which game Stevie will have his eyes on this weekend.
Ajax, PSV.
Exactly. That's it from us. Stay tuned for Extra Time from Barcelona with Dan and the guys.
Welcome in then to the latest edition of Extra Time. As always, thank you very much for your tweets. Of course, a very special setting for the next few days as we're here ahead of El Clasico. Sid, Pablo, Ali alongside me. It's not bad, is it, boys?
No, it's not.
Look at that.
Sorry.
It is absolutely
it
gorgeous.
It will do
it's just
fine.
Perfect. Pablo's moaning about it being cold. You live it, you should be used
Man,
to it.
I've been in England for 12 years, right?
But yeah, yeah, exactly. It's not raining, no mizzle, no, we're all right.
That's not gone.
But Pablo's working late tonight on ESPN Deportes. So we said, oh, Pablo, where would you recommend for dinner? And he's booked us an Argentinian restaurant eventually. Kind of laboured.
Won't let you down, guys.
Laboured towards the booking.
He had some difficulties. Yeah. He said, I have a friend. I know a friend. Well, I'm not quite sure if I can get you in. And then all the drama ensued.
All sorted.
All sorted. Now, our friend Steve Nicol would go to this restaurant and ask for the steak to be well done.
Mm. Well done.
How would that be received?
For the guys?
No, for, how do you say it? Is it buen hecho?
Bien hecho, well done.
Would he get hit by the...
Always remember that in Spain, if you don't ask for well done, it's absolutely like red.
Yes.
All red.
Yeah. But you can't have it too charred. What's the point?
No, but in Argentina, is the way that we eat red meat.
Yeah.
Well done.
Really?
Very well done.
Okay. Wow.
Maybe, I don't know, in America you're from Venezuela, yeah, you know that. In Argentina, if you see the stay red, to say, oh, come on, this is moo, you know, like.
Did you just moo?
Just moo. The call, you know, like.
Okay, first of all, you do not want to say this to Gamal Cote because he's very passionate about this.
Yeah,
don't get him started on this.
Yeah.
No, but come on, you should know that.
When you're
going for an Argentinian restaurant,
you should know that.
Make sure that you ask first.
Okay.
I also think you've only told half the story of Steve. It's not that Steve would want his steak incredibly well done. He would then want it minced and with potato put on the top of it.
Definitely no.
He wants a shepherd's pie. He doesn't want a steak unless it's in shepherd's pie form.
Okay, let's get to the questions. Okay. Enough of all this steak talk.
Okay.
Pablo, Ansu Fati or Vinicius Jr., if you had to pick one?
Ansu Fati.
Why?
Because I believe that he's already the best player for Barcelona, especially after coming from a long-term injury. And he proving again that how good he is. And I have to say that he also played for Spain. I cannot go with a Brazilian. With all respect to Vinicius, he's great. But, I have Argentinian.
Yes.
I have a Spanish because of my wife. She's a Spanish.
Right.
I cannot choose a Brazilian.
And we were talking during the show of Ronaldinho completely destroying
you. I hate Brazilians.
There we go.
I'm sorry.
Except Silvinho. Silvinho, he was playing for Barcelona years ago.
Yeah.
We are very close friends.
Okay.
Wow.
He's the only one Brazilian I love.
My wife is Brazilian.
Uh-oh. I don't know your wife.
Uh-oh. Well, there you go.
Uh-oh.
And if you did...
No.
What?
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 Sidetrack.
She's definitely not watching. It's fine. Sid. Wow, what a question this is. Sid, of course, wrote a book about La Liga, which is called...
Fear and Loathing in La Liga.
Oh, any copies available?
In all good bookshops.
In the bargain bin. Which is your favourite El Clasico moment and why?
Wow. I think that in terms of the expression of this being the biggest game in the world, maybe the 2-2 from 2012, when you have Messi and Ronaldo both at the very, very peak of their game, the quality of the two teams, and I think that was the expression of just... There is not football as good as this.
Right. I thought you might have said Figo, Pig's Head, that kind of...
That was extraordinary.
Yeah.
The game itself wasn't very good. I mean, we forget that. You know, when, I suppose when there's a
If only there was some sort of book to remind me.
I didn't talk about the game very much, actually, to be fair.
Ali, which big club will Erling Haaland end up at next season, and why is it Chelsea? Thomas Tuchel, of course, talking this week, saying he's a big admirer, that they're not in the base, you know, kind of playing down the chances of getting Haaland.
I'm sorry, it's Romero Lukaku, not at Chelsea.
Well, you could line them both up together. That's what the interviewer was saying.
No. Lukaku will remain at Chelsea, of course, and Erling Haaland, why not here? Why not here in Spain? I don't know if here in Barcelona.
Right.
I don't know whether they
could. It'd be good if you had like Mbappe at Real Madrid, Haaland at Barcelona.
That would be outstanding. That would be ideal for us, by the way.
How would you get on defending against Erling Haaland?
I would give space to him. I'm not saying I'm going to kick him.
Would you foul him? Then,
yeah, no, seriously. I mean, he's so good running in behind. He's a powerful player. But as a defender, it's two ways. Or you go very tight on him, you know, very close, don't let him turn, because on the run he's very fast and very strong. But then if you give him too much space in behind, then you could be also in a
You'd be in trouble already, Pablo.
Just drop and ask your teammate to get, you know, narrow, compact, and that's it.
So basically, you don't want to defend
them. No space around. No space around.
Can someone else please deal with this guy?
Yes. Hey, guys. Haaland is here.
But being a fullback is tough.
Yeah.
Nobody want to be a fullback. You have to play against quick wingers, fast wingers. They're all most very good dribbles.
Uh-huh.
Being a fullback is terrible, mate.
Oh, yeah. Of all the jobs in the world, be a professional footballer.
No, I'm not saying this, but nobody wants to be a fullback. Nobody want to be Pablo Zabaleta.
Yeah, so obvious don't question.
Be Alan Ronaldinho.
That's for different reasons.
So obvious question then. How did you say, hey, I'll play fullback?
Yeah, exactly. Why did you choose to play if it's such a horrible
Normally
position?
I was a holding midfielder.
Uh-huh. And they say, his touch is not good enough.
But you know, good enough as a holding midfielder. We've got another one which is better than you. We need you as a fullback.
Okay, Pablo, besides the obvious choice in Messi, who was the best international teammate you played with at Argentina? That's a good question.
I would say Agüero.
That's convenient.
That's convenient.
No, because you got to tell the story.
You got to tell the story.
No. Listen, I played with him at Man City for so many years, and I know him,
right? Yes,
you know, very well.
So he rang you up and said, "Where should I live?" And you said, "Oh, I'll tell you what, the house next door is for rent."
Now the thing was, you know, normally when you know somebody in an ex-teammate, you know, I've been in Barcelona for the few years, I know the city. When you got a friend who come to the same place, you would say, okay, look at this place, you know it's nice, or I don't know, you can go to
get
the
to the
beach,
point, Pablo.
You know.
Come on.
So next to my house, it was an empty house because the guy who was
Trincao.
Trincao was there. He left. He went to England. That house was free.
They wouldn't let me in.
No.
We've already established in Pablo's neighbourhood, they're not letting me in.
Isn't that nice to have a nice?
Next time I will ask you.
Isn't that a nice thing to have a nice friend like Conaguero next door?
The house next to mine is free. It's empty. So come and have a look at the house. And now he's moving in next month.
Okay, and why might that provide some issues?
Why is that a problem?
No, it's not a problem. I'm happy to have Sergio next to me. The only thing is sometimes he's with so many friends around him. So
basically,
I'm a family man, right? I got two kids. I go to bed at 10 o'clock. Now it's too late for me. I should be in bed, maybe.
Is this what Alex Ferguson meant when he referred to you lot as the noisy neighbour? So, he's actually talking about Agüero.
So we're going to have a conversation with Kun, and we said, Kun, listen, I'm so happy to have you as my neighbour, but...
Yeah, no. Mrs. Zabaleta's going to have a lot of conversations with you, saying, why on earth did you invite him to live next door?
So, yeah, Kun Agüero, come on, let's back to what we're talking. He was the best player that's played with an international
Not the best neighbour.
Sid, with Griezmann finally scoring for Atleti, do you expect him to return to his pre-Barcelona form?
No, because I don't expect him to return to his pre-Barcelona position. I think his role will be slightly different because Atletico have changed, but I think he will be a much better fit than he was at Barcelona.
Pablo, what was going through your mind in the final minutes of the QPR game? How did you feel when Agüero scored?
Wow, one of those moments. Now, seriously, come on. one of those moments, I will never forget in my life. I mean, when you look at this game, many people forgot that I scored the first goal. They forgot and go, everyone talking about where his goal, blah, blah, blah. But I scored the first goal.
No one cares about that.
No, man. I know. but then, losing 2-1 after 90 minutes, with a big chance to win the first Premier League after so many years. Those 5 minutes, unbelievable. Yeah. I think I have no words to describe that moment.
What was the party like afterwards?
Big party, but with wife, and family. with the chairman in Manchester, a lovely party after the game.
Oh, lovely, beautiful party. Very good. for Ali, what was it like playing against a playmaker like Riquelme?
Oh, boy. Such a naturally talented player and mercurial. You didn't really know what you were going to get from Riquelme until the ball got to his feet, and then you knew full well how incredibly talented he was. Half of the time, his shoes were untied when he was playing. This guy is doing a slow jog around the field, and you're thinking, we got him. And then he got on the ball, and you didn't have him. He had you. He was in full control. You were not. He was outstanding.
He was special.
He was absolutely amazing.
A genius.
I mean, you can go on YouTube and watch so many clips on him, and you can spend hours watching him, what videos of him, because he was absolutely fantastic.
True genius.
Yeah, true genius.
Because of his personality, sometimes confrontational, sometimes just you didn't quite understand what his perspective was. He became somewhat unpopular, but the guy on the field was incredible with the ball at his feet.
Sid, you followed him, of course, when he was here.
Yeah, and he was a curious player as well, because everything happened slowly.
Yes.
But it happened very quick at the same time. So you have this sense that he's not really making an effort. He's not really trying. And then, boom, they play the pass and everything would open up. Mm. Everything would be clear. And you get this sense that it's all chaotic, and then it would be given sense every time the ball came to him. And he was just a brilliant player. It's true that at the end of his time at Villarreal, it didn't end well, partly because of that character that you're talking about, partly because of the sense of kind of confrontation with the club's president, but what a footballer.
At the Olympic Games back in 2008 in Beijing in China, it was Riquelme, Messi, Higuain, Di Maria and Aguero up front. It was just
Who was the fullback?
Someone called Sabaleta.
Did he score in that QPR game?
No.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
The first goal, people forget about
come
that.
On.
People forget about
it. It was lovely to watch these four guys play off.
Flamenek.
Yeah, incredible.
Did you win gold?
Yes.
It was Sergio Romero.
No. Did you win gold?
Did you win gold?
Ah, sorry.
The gold medal.
We won against Nigeria the final.
Ah, and where's your gold medal now? Do you have it?
I got it in my house. Yep. I got like a museum. Uh-huh. And,
I'm disappointed. I thought you were going to undo your shirt and it was going to be hanging around your neck.
Awesome. I would wear it everywhere, wouldn't you?
Absolutely.
No, I got it.
Never take it off.
Oh, this is simple. Simple no. Pablo, is Argentina winning the next World Cup?
I hope so. Not too sure. It's going to be difficult, but I think so many people want Messi to win the World Cup. Come on. No. But he won absolutely everything with the club. He won Copa America. And I think the World Cup's going to be massive for him. And, of course, I want Argentina to win, but it's going to be tough.
It wouldn't be as big as a gold medal, though, would it?
No.
Man, we've been very close in Brazil.
Yeah.
Cool. We lost to Germany.
I know, we were there.
I remember.
We were there.
I remember.
You were there.
Yes, Higuain.
Higuain.
Yeah. Here we are. Okay. To Sid, goodness me, this is one for you. In all your years in Spain, who is the one player you thought would make it to the top but didn't?
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't know the answers to that.
Yeah, that's tough.
I'm trying to think of a player that really stood out and we all thought was going to be great was Jesse, and it hasn't really happened at Real Madrid.
Right.
He came through, he was the outstanding player in that Real Madrid youth team.
Yeah.
Beyond that, it's hard to think of a really obvious candidate.
Robinho, maybe?
Yeah, Rubinho.
Yeah, I mean, his debut against Cardiff, his debut for Real Madrid, was extraordinary. Right. Genuinely had never seen anything like it. Right. And actually, I, to be fair, I'm going to slightly defend Rubinho here. I think he was seen as a complete failure. I don't think he was. I think it was the wrong team, the wrong time for him, and perhaps didn't reach the level people expected. But he still did things that were different to other players, did things that were better than other players.
Who would you prefer as a next door neighbour party-wise, Rubinho or Kun Agüero?
I just prefer to stay in the other side of the city, to be honest.
What was that like when he came in?
Imagine, it was massive signing. Yeah, Man City paid 45 million at that time. Yeah. It was ridiculous money. He came from Real Madrid. And it was basically when everything just started, you know, for Manchester City. And it was really good in training. For the Premier League, you know, for the intensity of the game, it was different. You know, in England, you know, you have to run up and down during 90 minutes, very direct. And he wanted ball into feet every single time.
Right.
So then Bellamy came in January and he was like two big, you know, characters.
Right, okay.
Bellamy was different and they were sharing the same position and you know, he was like a big competition for Robinho when Bellamy came, because he was really good at that time.
Yeah, Bellamy. That mindset, I imagine, was completely different, yeah? Because
Robinho... different. And obviously, Elano, another Brazilian, was there.
Oh, more Brazilians that he hates.
Yeah, no, but I mean...
Is that a Brazilian you like?
No, but I think Robinho was good that season. He's got a few great goals. He scored against Chelsea, his debut for Manchester City.
Right.
By free kick. But yeah, I really enjoyed my time with Robinho.
Look at that smile.
Training.
Look at that smile.
I don't know how well you can translate this joke, but there was a joke that used to go round in Madrid when Robinho was there, which was, why do people call Robinho the triathlete?
Yeah.
Porque corre bicicleta y nada. Which in English is like, so he runs, he does a step over, and then nothing happens.
Yes. Yeah. He used to climb out the window at Real Madrid to avoid the media and all
to
that.
To be fair, he wasn't the only one.
Yeah, no, quite a few of them did. Okay, final one. Pablo, with Kompany and Agüero receiving statues outside of the Etihad, how devastated are you not to receive?
he's going to receive a figurine.
Well, no, definitely. I'm not like these guys. I'm always saying that for me, Silva, Agüero, and Kompany, they were like different to the rest. These three guys, they were like the core of the team. They've been there for so long. They brought too much success into the club. So I'm so pleased and so happy that the club gave them a chance to have the statue. For me, I always say the same. When the game of the farewell last game at the Etihad, for me that was a great moment, very emotional.
Yeah.
And I have to say that for me that was enough.
Oh, maybe like an executive bathroom or something like that.
What we could do is we could get a statue of you, pop round to Agüero's house and leave it in the garden for when he turns up.
Yeah. I tell you what, a bobblehead. You get a bobblehead. You can get that.
Beautiful, wobbling around. Ah, that's it. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you.
We will be back tomorrow for more. Thank you as always for your tweets. Be sure to join us tomorrow as we can continue to count down to our Clásico this Sunday.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.